This is the Roaring Elephant Podcast, and here I am once more with my... Let's see, if I'm Indiana Jones, diving through the archives and the temples...
What's the kit called?
What does that it's make? What
it's
does
a
that
two make letter. It's the little kid. Ah, he's got an abbreviated name, two letters. Yeah. I can't remember it. Oh, I need to watch it again.
Okay. But yes, that's you, Jon.
I'll be the Watson to your Indiana Jones. Let's break it open.
Fair enough. Yeah. So we are back once more on our bit of a historical journey, talking a little bit about why is it so difficult to make money from open source?
Short round.
Yeah. There you go. Using the journey that HashiCorp went on as a bit of a case study for all of this. And at the end of the last episode, we'd got to the point, again, another fairly major milestone, where HashiCorp decided that they were going to relicense their open source projects, the majority of their open source projects, under the Business Source License, often abbreviated to the BSL. And we started talking about this even in between us recording these two episodes, and we decided we would save this discussion for the episode itself. So yeah, Jon, you had thoughts.
Well, there's a lot of thoughts. I mean, changing from an open source license to a less open source license, or even closed source license, depending on who you talk to, is very near and close to me. You can look on LinkedIn where I'm working, so you can see where I'm at. And we typically don't talk about our own employers on the podcast, just to make sure everything is nicely separated and there's no conflict of interest happening there. But most people that went to BSL, and I think HashiCorp and Redis are the two that spring to mind. No, I'm not entirely sure if Redis went to BSL, but they went to a similarly...
Non-OSI approved license, let's say that.
And the main thing that they want to push through is that you shouldn't be allowed to just use it and make a lot of money on it without giving something back.
Mm.
And that last part is very important, because open source does literally allow you to take it and make money with it. But if you're making billions and billions of dollars on top of that little project and you're not giving anything back, that at some point becomes a problem for the projects, because they have costs. And if they are selling a enterprise version of it and they don't have the margins that the other big behemoth has, and of course with other big behemoth we're talking about big dark bad Amazon here. I mean, we've talked about this early on the podcast as well, and there's people against and throw it, but I don't think it's deniable that Amazon has profited hugely from a lot of open source things. Up until a couple of years ago, they were actively not working with open source. Last couple of years, at least the marketing side of them makes it appear that they're working with projects more. Mm. I don't have enough insight if it's actually more or less than marketing, but I don't really see Amazon as a positive force in open source. I mean, on one hand, they're positive because they allow a lot of projects to become very popular and well known, which is a good thing. But a lot of projects have been in a situation where they either have to start working with Amazon if Amazon is willing, and in that case that's good, but if you can't get that to happen, then you have to take steps. Now for HashiCorp, it's a weird thing, because again, if the reason to go to a not open source license is to say, hey, Mr. Big Cloud Hyperscaler, you can only use us now if you go into a commercial enterprise agreement with us. Because, as we discussed last episode, and if you didn't hear that, please go back to the beginning of the episodes, because these are building upon each other. HashiCorp, Open Terraform specifically, was very, very integrated with Amazon, to the point that anything you ran on Amazon, as you said, you had the numbers last time, pretty much was driven by Terraform. So for most of the users of Terraform, this became a huge problem. And obviously there's always the people that yell fire in a crowded theater. I mean, there was a lot of hyperbole going on in these cases, as typically conversations about open source licenses are very easygoing and logically based.
People are passionate. People are passionate.
Not passionate. Yes, but in these cases, you have a lot of missionary sentiment coming up, telling, I know what's right, and you, if you're not saying what I'm saying, then you must be wrong by default. There's a little gray area there. And I think HashiCorp was undeservedly, I think, bashed a little too hard. But it is definitely true that their change in license has had a big consequence for the users, past, present, or prospective users of the products. And it has definitely been an effect on what they were doing. Now, that is how I, in my distortion bubble, if I can borrow your words, see it. How do you see it?
Well, I saw Terraform and a lot of what HashiCorp were doing as not being as tightly wedded to AWS. Like I saw more of it just, it was just ubiquitous with infrastructure as code. It was just everywhere. Everyone was using it in some way, shape, or form. And yes, you're absolutely right. In my mind, it wasn't so much that AWS was making huge amounts of money off it, although that was absolutely true, but it was that almost it seemed like everybody was making money out of Terraform apart from the people that actually created it in the first place. Like all of those folks who created those management platforms for Terraform that weren't the platforms that HashiCorp produced made huge amounts of money from those, or not necessarily they made management platforms for Terraform, but they integrated Terraform support and Terraform management into their management platforms. And HashiCorp never saw a single cent in a lot of those cases. Now, maybe they negotiated deals with some of those organizations, but with most of them, they never saw a single dime there. And in my mind, that was one of the big kind of areas of concern. But the second one, in my mind, was the community uproar from this change. The community responded to the way that HashiCorp did this and the license that they chose very, very negatively. And you could see this coming out in multiple different ways. Yes, you saw the almost, religious fervor of people, posting all sorts of very unkind things all over the internet. And you can argue, whether you think that's justified or not. I personally think that, there are always people behind these decisions, and there are people behind these projects, and there are people behind these companies, and conversations between people, you need to have a certain level of respect. And in this particular situation, there was a lot of rage, there was a lot of vitriol, there was a lot of very aggressive and damning sentiment shared during this time. And this, in my mind, is probably the biggest thing that happened, because it really was the point at where someone or a group of organizations got together and said, like, we're not standing for this. Like, we will not sit idly by and let this happen. We're going to do something about it. And again, this whole kind of case study, yes, we're talking about HashiCorp and they have many different products. We're mainly focusing on this story on Terraform, because A, this is the part of their portfolio I'm most familiar with personally, and B, I think it is also their widest deployed and utilized technology. And what I mean by the sort of the we will not stand idly by, we will do something about this, that is the creation of the Open Tofu project, which was a direct fork of Terraform.
Can I just say worst name ever?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm pretty sure this came from Open Terraform. Well, let's not use Terraform. Let's call it OpenTF, OpenTofu. I think that's kind of where it went. But using a well-known substitute name for something for your project means, yeah, I don't know.
I mean, it could have been worse.
I liked.
Could have called it Open Atlas. Shout back to our first episode there. You're not wrong there. You're not wrong there. But this then, you know, created even. We've had folks from Open Tofu on the podcast before, we had a bit of a deeper dive into some of that back then. But you know, this led to a legal cease and desist letter being sent by HashiCorp to the Open Tofu Foundation. I mean, that just further added fuel to the fire. Yeah,
that didn't make sense.
It's...
You were open source. People can fork your project. That's basically what open source means.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll pause the... This is where we're back into the history part. We'll pause that for now. And let's specifically talk about Terraform and Open Tofu and, you know, not so much what the differences are between them, because they are still today, you know, largely considered as being interchangeable and that sort of thing. But one of the things here is this is a little bit about trying to peel back a lot of the hype and hyperbole behind Terraform and Open Tofu. And I try to look at, you know, how do you measure... like things like adoption, like how widely is one used versus
the
other.
You put a post on Twitter, X, and they get full truth there.
No, truth is a different social network. Anyway, I tried a few different things. I looked at various different, DevOps or developer surveys. I looked at, a few different things. And where I landed was definitely not the perfect way to do it. But, you know, your mileage may vary, as the saying goes. I went and I ended up just going to the GitHub star history. And there's...
I repeat again what I said before the episode recording. This is just an XKCD comic.
It does look that way. It is from star-history.com. You can go there and you get your free funky GitHub star graphs for any project. Or any repo, I should say. So here you can see, if you're following on YouTube, something pretty interesting, I think, at least. So you've got the red line, which shows Terraform's GitHub star growth, which is basically a pretty straight line that goes up and to the right from the project's creation through to now.
Straight, not a horizontal line, but a diagonal increasing line continuously without interruption, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Just making sure people without visual in, who are not looking at this YouTube, bad people, have an idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, it just goes up and to the right in a good strong graph.
That's how
there.
My revenue should look like.
Exactly. Revenue, profits, customer happiness, all should go up and to the right. Anyway. Depending on your axes may vary. Now, what you can also see is there's a blue line and a yellow line. Again, this is wonderful podcasting. And these just pop into existence on the graph and at the point where Open Tofu was created. And the reason why I think this is really interesting is the yellow line is for the Open Tofu manifesto. This is basically where the Open Tofu project outlines their reasons for existing, what they stand for, what they're going to do. It's their manifesto. And you can see that from basically day one, the number of GitHub stars on this shoots up meteorically, like straight vertical, until it very closely gets towards the kind of number of GitHub stars that HashiCorp's Terraform has. Like it's crazy, the kind of sheer vertical rise in popularity. it does then, you know, tail off to something not quite just a flat horizontal line. It's very slowly growing, but it's not growing at pace. So that's the yellow line. But the really interesting thing is the blue line, which is open tofu, does have the same kind of meteoric initial rise, but levels off about, I would say, roughly half the popularity of Hashicorp's Terraform. Now, again, on the one hand, that's incredibly impressive for a project to launch and get as much visibility and popularity as a project that's literally been out for 8 years before your project gets released. That's hugely, hugely impressive. But from that point onwards, you know, I would say the curve between OpenTofu and, you know, and the curve of Terraform, they're, you know, if you squint a little bit, they're basically parallel. They're basically growing at the same sort of speed. And to me, the fact that they are growing at the same kind of speed, but the manifesto, the growth of the popularity of the manifesto has, you know, all but leveled off at this point.
Plateaued.
Yeah. I think this to me tells, again, there's several stories as old as time throughout this series, and this is one of them. It's very easy to put your mouth behind something and say, oh, this is important to me. It's a lot more difficult to put your money, your time, and your effort behind something. And to me, at least, the story this tells is lots of people were very vocal and very verbal about OpenTofu is the one and only true way forward. You know, Terraform is dead to me. But actually, the number of people adopting OpenTofu over Terraform is nowhere near as cut and dried. Now, again, this is the GitHub star history is a proxy for popularity and adoption. I could not try as I did. Find any real usable stats on this. You know, if you find some out there, please let us know, please share them. You know, I looked at various developer surveys, various DevOps surveys and things like that, but yeah, I just couldn't find something consistent over this sort of period. But yeah, it's an interesting graph, I think, and I think it tells an interesting story.
Yeah, I mean, we're running long again, so I'm just going to give my idea around what I'm seeing, and then we can close off this episode. Mm-hmm. But for me, yeah, the manifesto going straight up, that's just people telling how the world should be, but not how the world is. It's telling people what... I'm telling you what you should think, not what I'm doing, but what you should think. Don't do it as I do, but do what I say. And, I mean, it's not bad. I mean, giving a signal out to HashiCorp that people are dissatisfied was a good signal, and I hope HashiCorp listened to that signal. I think they did in the end as well. They have done a bit more community work around it. So from that point of view, I think the stars on the manifesto, it's normal that it went up meteorically because it was hype. And it's normal that it plateaued because once the hype died down, why would I star a manifesto? It doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. I also don't think that blue and red are exclusive. This isn't XOR. This is OR, including an AND. Because it would not surprise me that people that are very deep into Terraform and have starred Terraform because they like Terraform also star OpenTofu. Because the good thing about this is competition. Mm-hmm. Terraform is no longer the only kid on the block. There's now a second kid on the block, and if second kid on the block does something cool, the other kid needs to kind of also do something cool to kind of get in that lockstep, and that's how innovation happens. So if I'm an actual very tough, deep user of Terraform, I like the fact that OpenTofu is there, even if I'm choosing not to use it, because it gives competition and it should raise innovation. A graph you should maybe look at some point is the amount of commits and see if there's some kind of relationship there.
We have information incoming, but not this episode.
Okay. So that's something I think that explains why OpenTofu is lower than the red line. I think companies that need support contracts, stability, will have remained with OpenTofu regardless of the license change, because we're paying HashiCorp anyway for the enterprise license. So it didn't really affect them that much. And people that were using it in their own little hobby environments, well, now they had a way of doing more, because OpenTofu included probably, well, they couldn't include the enterprise features from HashiCorp because those were not open source, but OpenTofu kind of ideally would start building out more of that stuff in there. So for my hobby projects, it's probably a more innovative product, but with the risks inherent on a non-enterprise thing. But again, from a hobby project, I don't care that much, so I'll go there. But there will always be a difference up until the point, and I do think at some point blue and red might cross, or at least join together, and that will happen, maybe, potentially, when OpenTofu does exactly what HashiCorp did and become an enterprise project with enterprise queues and licensing and whatever coming at it. And that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. If they get to that point, more power to them. Again, competition is good. Having more than one infrastructure as code, which are even API compatible with each other, that is the best kind of competition you can have. I do like the fact that even though the hype was so much against Terraform, against HashiCorp, their stars haven't suffered from it. So even though a lot of people were loudmouths about it, it kind of proves that all those that make the most noise don't necessarily have the biggest influence. It is called a silent majority for a reason.
And also the vocal minority. Yeah,
exactly. There's a reason it's minority, and it's always going to be minority in the vocals and majority in silence. And it's a silent majority. If those are on your side, yes, your image gets a bit of a bump. It's not nice. You need to have a thick skin, and it's probably hasn't been a fun ride for the people at HashiCorp around that period. But it's good to see that it didn't crumble. And there have been examples that it was totally different. This is not really the same thing, but OpenOffice, LibreOffice, for example, those lines crossed very quickly. But that was basically Oracle being Oracle. In this case, I kind of like the graph. I think it tells a story, as you said, but I think the story is all in all positive.
Yeah.
It gives how people give feedback, it gives how competition happens, and it gives how people actually endorse and like and approve of competition.
Agreed. Agreed. Agreed.
And with that bombshell, Dave actually agreeing with something I said. It took 10 years, people, but it happened today. Well, it happened a couple of times, I think, in the past. But let's not jinx it and say this is all the time we have for today. You can support this podcast by becoming a patron. Patrons do help us a lot, just by being patrons. It's cool to have patrons. It's fun. We're on YouTube, and if you want to see the nice pretty graphs, which I'm going to take off the screen now, you have to go to YouTube, because graphs on MP3s sadly don't work that well. And even on top of that, you have notification bells and subscription buttons on YouTube, so it's all cool there too. You can go to our website page, even at www.rollingouts.org. There's links there to all of the other stuff, and you can still send feedback to us by plain old email to podcast@roaringelephant.org. Let us know if you like this little series of episodes. We're having a bit of quite a bit of fun with it, so I hope our listeners also enjoy this. Until next time, my name is Green Graphion.
And my name is Surrounded by Stars, Dave.
I look forward to talk to you again, me and my star Dave, next week. Goodbye.
See you then.